Okay, but really look back at that. I'm not lying. I know it's something I might say, but go ahead. We don't have time for my jabber.
Well, we're already live. So we will test out Mom is seeing things, and I'm hoping that she's not having any type of
breakdown.
Break from reality here. But go ahead and introduce yourself, and then I'll introduce myself as usual, of course, and then we'll explain how this recording is going to go because Elena's not here this time.
I'm Mom.
And I'm Sherry. This is Outline of a Murder, and mm-hmm. we are still recording remotely, and then this time it's just me and Mom because Elena has a previous engagement. So we're hoping before the season ends, when we record tomorrow, it'll be all three of us, and we are doing it remote, so expect videos. I will be posting videos of our recordings.
No, not of me. I have no makeup on.
Too bad. Should have that.
This has been a weird season to do this one here.
Mm-hmm.
We've got different things going on, but we're going to get it done and get out on the time, thanks to Sherry. She does all of it. All we do is just talk. She does all the editing, all the bloopers, which I wish she wouldn't do, and things like that, but I let it just go.
It has been a very weird season, and one of the most difficult to get this dang podcast done. So I'm very excited that we're getting, we're halfway there. This case mm-hmm. is one that you suggested, the Corey Richens case.
Yes, and also, I don't usually know the cases. I'm surprised as the listeners are.
But you said that you just watched a special on this, so I'm excited to hear what you contribute.
You know, I will as we go, unless you want to know a little thing.
Go ahead.
I thought before when she was, you know, maybe not guilty because it came out he took those drugs, you know, he was a drug abuse. When I saw the special and the proof they had and her letter, when she said, oh yeah, I was just doing it for the next book, she's just guilty of sin.
I'd like to hear more on the letter that you're talking about. I do have some updates, one that came out 4 days ago, and so I'll play some of those videos. But let me play, I'll wait until we get to the initial interview over her book and to play that video. But this one's a crazy story. It's also unusual because we don't have a lot of the wife or the girlfriend committing the murders of their spouses or boyfriends. Typically, it's the other way around. But she has a definite characteristics, definite red flags, I think.
And it's really sad, too, for the three boys, the three kids.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just horrible.
I couldn't find proof on every single thing, but there were definitely signs of, you know, narcissism, lying, and gaslighting, I believe. Did you notice that in the special that you watched?
It was. And a little violence on her part, too, which I was surprised that didn't come out. But
interesting.
They had some family members. Yeah, I'll tell you later if you want to hear.
I would like to hear. Mm-hmm. Now, this case, the reason it's such a good one, besides just the makeup and how it fits within our goal, is also because it's a perfect example of not staying with someone because of the kids. So what we're going to find out is that was his main motivation for not getting away sooner. And abuse, whether it's, you know, the I guess you'd call soft abuse, where it's like the words, the gaslighting, the things like that, we have found are just as dangerous as physical abuse. In fact, the majority of the people that we've covered were not physically abused. So I think people can make a mistake of looking at the behavior and be like, well, they're not hitting me, or they're not, you know, doing this or that physically, but that actually doesn't matter. There's a pattern of behavior that's seen, whether it ever escalates into physical violence.
In your research, did you find anything about what he did, a precaution that he took?
I've got a few things that came out, but make sure you alert us to some of the things you found out.
I'll wait till you get to that part, because sometimes I tend to jump ahead, and then that will go into the violent.
Okay.
Did, yeah.
All right. Now, on the special, did you hear how they pronounced the town they were in? Is it Camas or Camas, Utah? Did you hear that?
I did, but I don't remember.
Okay. Well, I, you know, if anybody's from Utah, I apologize. I meant to look that up, but didn't. But on Friday, March 4th, so 2022, I mean, it's, you know, almost 2 years ago, Corey and Eric Richens were at their Camas, Utah home. And I put air quotes celebrating the purchase of a, it was an unfinished 20,000 square foot mansion that was sitting on 8.75 acres in Midway, Utah. And Corey.
When you said celebrate, confetti just came down in front of you. Sherry, I'm not hallucinating, I'm telling you. About that house, though, on the special, and you may know, I'm telling you, you've got to watch this when it's done. I wouldn't lie. And I haven't had a drink.
Have you taken any drugs? Do I need to be aware of any? Okay.
All right. Anyway, that house, she's, you'll find out, but she started a fixer-upper, and she wasn't that great at it. But anyway, he did not want her to buy that house because it was too expensive. She was going to fix it up.
Yeah, she was going to fix it in order to flip it.
Yeah.
And, but, I mean, it was, the purchase price was almost $2 million. And even though she was excited about the project, Eric wasn't. He thought it was too expensive. He didn't have any, you know, faith that she'd be able to do it without it costing them more money. And so it really wasn't a celebration. I don't know if she tried to make it come off as a celebration or if that's how it was reported. But to me, it was not a celebration. In fact, it's a little bit confusing because, and maybe you can clear this up, family members told investigators that Eric was actually going to tell Corey that night that they were not going to buy the mansion, but some report that they already had. So can you clear that up for us?
Yeah. If I'm remembering correctly, in the special, the house that she bought, she had signed his name to, forged his name to get the loan.
Ooh.
So can you see me okay?
Yeah. So this is the mansion that,
look at that. It's huge.
Yeah. That we're referring to. And it would have been a massive, project. It was not anything small. And I mean, you would really like, if you're just getting into flipping, this is not the project.
No.
And from what I can find, she hadn't flipped before. Is that accurate?
She had, but right to this day, she's getting sued by the owners because she made a lot of shortcuts and wasn't on regulation. When I first saw her flipping, you know, he was in construction. They met at Home Depot.
Yeah.
And so I thought he was going to do a lot of the work, but he really didn't do a lot of the work.
He probably was busy.
Yeah, he was busy with his own company, but yeah.
Okay.
I mean, even seasoned flippers wouldn't get a house like
that. No.
Starting out.
Yeah, and it's just a huge project. And so if we, based on what you've learned and what I can tell from my research, so it sounds like that there was no celebration at all, and Eric wasn't even aware that she had forged his name because he was going to tell her that he was not going to buy that house. So it sounds like she actually forged his name on the paperwork and the house was already purchased.
I come to find out at the end.
What do you mean?
Well,
is this tied to
the time but that she was flipping houses? She had apparently got loans.
We'll get into all that. I just want to stay on the mansion. So the night of the death, she's saying it's a celebration. From what we have found out, it was not a celebration. He was not aware that he was now the owner of a $2 million mansion. Okay. Later that evening, Corey made him, it's called a Moscow Mule. I've never had one. It's vodka, ginger, beer, ice, and lime. And then she also gave him a THC-infused gummy around 11 p.m. And it seems that from the crime scene that Eric went to bed either right after this nightcap or he had it in the room where he was already in bed and he was having his his nightcap. So if anything that you have found out, if it's opposite or doesn't support it, let me know. Okay.
Because I don't remember that part. Yeah.
So
Corey, I know he had one, but I don't know where he was.
Corey settled into bed, but then she said that one of her sons called for her after a night terror. So she got into bed with him, and she says that she fell asleep next to her son. She woke up at 3:22 a.m. and returned to her bed, snuggling up next to Eric, when she noticed that he was, quote, cold to the touch. She called 911, but here's where I have the first problem. Eric was not found by EMTs or policemen in bed. He was at the foot of the bed. Do you know if EMT took him out of the bed and performed CPR on the floor, or is that how they found him when they walked into the room on the floor?
I don't know that, no. I'm sure I saw it. I just don't remember, Sherry.
Yeah, that, I'm just curious because, you know, how could she snuggle up next to him and he's cold to the touch? Because from what it sounds like from my research, when they arrived, he was not in bed. He was at the foot of the bed. And I don't see her pulling him out of the bed and dragging him to the foot.
Or maybe he was needed help, you know, while she was in the bedroom with the son. If I remember correctly, she also waited a little bit of time before calling the police.
Wouldn't surprise me, because most do.
Me neither. They like to try to cover up things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So before we go further, I want to give a little bit of background on, you know, Corey and Eric and then their relationship. Corey was born April 20th, 1990 in North Carolina to Ronald Horace and Lisa Darden. She had three siblings, Ronnie Jr., who has since come to, you know, defend his sister, Renee and Mindy. She and her siblings were mostly raised by her mother, and not much else is known of her childhood that I could find. Did they bring out anything else about her background? Okay. She received a bachelor's degree in healthcare administration from Weber State University and a master's degree in HR from Utah State University. But for some reason, she didn't pursue a career along those lines for any length of time. She then worked briefly as an administrator at Park City Hospital and some other medical service areas at Park City Medical Center. And she seems to have been bitten, you know, by the entrepreneurial bug. She had a housekeeping service in 2011, and then she launched her own real estate company, buying and flipping luxury homes. But we've seen this where the person just cannot keep a job. They can't, not in all the cases, but it's like they just go from thing to thing to thing to thing instead of sticking with one thing. And I really like Eric. He seemed like a really neat person. I don't know. I'd like to hear more on his drug things in a bit, but he was born May 13th, 1982. So that would put him 8 years older in Bountiful, Utah, which I've been to Gene and Linda Richens. And he was the oldest of three siblings, the only son. His family and friends said that he was a family man, very protective of his sisters, hardworking, like when he was young, and even probably as an adult, he helped his father with their family cattle ranch. He was a natural athlete, and then he was committed to his faith as a Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I also found out he could speak fluent Spanish because he went on a field trip, a two-year mission trip in Mexico before he attended college at the University of Utah.
And he was extremely shy.
Oh.
They interviewed the lady at Home Depot that was friends with both of them, and he came in. In fact, he couldn't even ask her out. He had a buddy come in and ask her for her number.
Really?
Extremely shy, the lady said.
So that may be why it took...
And he just liked her. Yeah.
Yeah, the opposites attract thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know he had sent his buddy, and I did learn it took him a while to ask her out. So I didn't know if it was personality or if maybe he was a little bit gun shy.
Yeah, he was shy, but everyone loved him. They said that he would drop anything to help anybody.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so. Well, and that's what, yeah.
I'm like a nice guy. It's so tragic. Nice. I mean, it's just tragic.
Yeah, that's what it said that, well, he earned his bachelor's degree in international studies with a minor in English. He was also entrepreneurial. He started his business, C&E Stone Masonry, 2 years after graduation with a close friend and business partner, Cody Wright. He loved being outdoors, hunting, archery. He also found time to volunteer with Summit County Search and Rescue. So it sounds like he was just a really neat person. Let me show pictures of the two of them. So this is both of them, it looks like, on a helicopter ride. And here's both of them at a restaurant.
Do you think, or am I the only one, her smile doesn't look real on that last picture?
Like this one? Sort of,
yeah.
It may not. This one to me doesn't, because her eyes don't wrinkle up. Because typically the cheeks will lift and the eyes will wrinkle. So this one might be, but this one actually doesn't look like it is to me.
But he always looks happy.
Well, and this one, actually, he looks a little sad to me.
I wonder how long they'd been together.
I wonder if it was close to when he was murdered.
So sad.
Okay. Eric, like you said, met Corey at Home Depot. It sounds like they would see each other a lot there. And now my research said through a colleague named Linda King. Was she in the?
Yeah, she was the main one they were interviewing. So she was a checker, the head checker, and she befriended, what's her name?
Poop Bird.
Yeah. She was at the next register and they became friends, but she said Eric and her, he'd call her mama.
Mm.
And because they were real close, he came in a lot because, you know, being in construction and real close to him. She took it very, very hard. She just was shocked.
Now, did Corey work there?
No. Oh, is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
Poop Bird. Yeah, she worked there. She was a checker.
Oh, so that's a colleague. Okay, so she was a checker. Yeah. Linda King was a checker. And Eric would be in there quite a bit because of his construction business. He had a crush on Corey. But
he wouldn't tell her.
Yeah, okay. Wow, so she's working at Home Depot at the time.
Corey's all bubbly all the time, she said. And Linda had told us, I think he likes, she said, I like him too. But he wouldn't ask her out. That's when... Hence, the buddy comes in and
does it for him. Okay.
Right.
Now, my research also showed that she was the catch of the town, that she had several guys that seemed to think she was cute and wanted to date her. And so I find it interesting that she's working at Home Depot when she has all those college degrees and she knows real estate.
I know. I found it weird, too. I don't know. But, you know, a lot of people these days go to college and they get out and they can't, you know, they can't find a job. But I found that real weird because she had a bachelor and a master's degree.
Yeah.
And a real estate license. That was just sort of strange.
It is. Now, I also learned that Eric had a pretty nasty divorce already before he met Corey. And I wondered if maybe that was part of the reason, you know, it took him a while to ask her out. You know, you say he's shy.
They said he was very shy.
They also said he didn't want to move too fast. That once they started dating, though, they hit it off. They were married June 15th of 2013 in the backyard of their home. So it appears that they lived together for a while. It was Corey's first marriage. And then, because I think they met like in 2010 to 2012. Do you know what the time frame was?
Oh, I don't, sweetheart.
Okay. Eric's mom encouraged him to have a prenup because...
Yeah, that was smart.
Yeah, the first divorce from his wife, Julie Jorgensen, they were married from 2005 to 2009. It took a huge emotional and financial toll on both of them. She was killed 2 years after the divorce in a car accident, January 2011.
Do you have a picture of them?
I don't. And they did not have any kids either, which thank goodness, really. I mean, losing a mom, the divorce, that would have been really hard. But he's been married once. Corey has not been married at all so far. Now, things start turning in 2016. At this point, let's see, they're married, we decided 2013, so we're, you know, roughly 3 years later, he got suspicious that Corey was stealing money from him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if he, like, ignored things or if he put, like, he couldn't get proof, but in 2020, so this is 4 years, potentially 4 years later, he had some numbers he was starting to collect. So $100,000 was taken from his accounts. He discovered that she had taken out credit cards in his name, running up debt a total of $30,000.
Loans.
And then it seems like these charges were for her house flipping business and personal expenses. He also learned that she had borrowed $250,000 using a home equity line of credit and a fraudulent power of attorney. She had signed his initials on the paperwork. In addition, $80,024 that was supposed to have paid Eric's federal taxes and $54,322 for estate taxes was missing. So now the IRS and the state are not getting paid. And he confronted her and she admitted to those things, but I'm sure there was more that she didn't admit to. So what did you learn from the special that you watched? Anything to add?
Well, you may have this, but you know, he really was smart because he was worried that something might happen. I don't know if you have this. I hope I'm not jumping ahead. So he had a really hefty life insurance policy.
Oh, so he jumping ahead.
Okay.
Yeah,
you go
no,
ahead.
I got that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, good.
But as far as the money, can it was there a lot more than the, I think we're probably up to over half a mil or at half a mil.
No, that's all I knew is what you had just said, yes.
Okay. I'm not sure of the timeline of events, if this was before or after he found out about the money, but they in 2020, they took a trip to Greece, and Eric fell violently ill after he drank a mixed drink that Corey prepared for him. He told his sisters that he thought she poisoned him, and I think it was after that trip in November of the same year that Eric transferred their home, all of his personal property, and his half of the masonry business under a living will and made his sister Katie the power of attorney. And Corey had no idea. I mean,
she had no idea.
Yeah.
Can I tell you what she did?
Yeah.
When she found out?
Oh, well, I.
Wait. You tell me when you want to know.
Yeah, because it's in there. It's in my notes. But
okay, good.
From what I understand, she didn't know till after he was dead.
Yep. Exactly.
And then in January of 2022, Eric and his business partner, Cody, got a call from their insurance company telling them that Corey had removed both of them from their life insurance policy and listed herself as the sole beneficiary. So now she's taken Cody off of the life insurance. So, of course, they change it back. But this, number one, shows how careful Eric was with his wealth and business. Yep. You know, having life insurance when you've got a partner in business is just a sound financial decision anyway, unless, you know, of course, your business partner is a poop bird and has you killed.
Yeah.
But the policy did allow for the remaining partner to buy out the other. And, you know, that's neat, but she just got it in her name. Obviously, to me, you've got violent illness and grief after you drink something she made. Now you have her. Well, let's go back to she's racking up a bunch of debt. She
in your name.
Exactly. She tries to poison you in a foreign country. And then number three, she's changing herself to the sole beneficiary on the life insurance policy. That should be enough to get away from this lady.
That's what I couldn't figure out watching that and reading about this. He knew and he knew it all. He knew she was poisoning him, but she stayed. He stayed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing.
We'll get into his mindset behind that.
Okay.
But now we have Valentine's Day. So this is 2022 Valentine's Day. Eric and Corey, they were having a romantic meal of lovingly prepared sandwiches at home. Others say that she made him a sandwich and put it on his truck seat with a note. So I'm not sure which, you know, if they were having their sandwiches together or if it was in his truck. But after he ate the sandwich, he had an allergic reaction. I couldn't find what he was allergic to, but he broke out in hives. He had trouble breathing, and then he had to use his son's EpiPen. He also took some Benadryl and passed out, and he told his business partner that he believed she was trying to poison him, and yet he still delayed filing for divorce because he wanted to keep his family intact for his children.
You know, people always say that because of the children. Sometimes, but my belief is, you know, when you're unhappy marriage, staying for the children to me is, I know people are going to get mad. Not a cop out, but I think that's a person that really wants the marriage to work. Because when you have a bad marriage, kids know.
Yes.
They're going to leave anyway eventually. Kids know. The same with keeping your family together when you know someone's trying to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but yet you tell people she's trying and everything she's doing, but you still stay.
Yes.
I'm sure his family, I'm positive that they probably said, get out of Dodge. I mean,
I can understand if you're in a marriage and your financial position might be precarious and you need to put things in place and you don't want the kids to suffer or you don't want, you know, the...
Right.
I can see that. What I can't
put it in place. Thanks.
What I can't see is he knows that she's trying to kill him.
Right.
But we've seen people do this. We've, you
all
know,
the time.
And it's incredible, actually. And I'm not sure. I think you're right. I don't think it's just the kids.
No.
Because to me, I would be afraid of for the kids. Like, okay, if she's trying to kill me, if she's trying to get my insurance policies, what will she do to the kids? And it's a deception. It's a myth to think that she wouldn't harm them too. I don't think this lady has a conscience.
But you know, and I understand unless you're in that situation, you can't tell. Because I know, remember, when I got robbed by family members, because you don't think like that, it's so out of the realm of possibility. I saw it right in front of me, things missing, but I just wouldn't believe that those people would do it.
The only thing is,
you know what I mean?
He knows she is.
Yeah, it's just...
No, he knows. He knows. He's already been poisoned like 2 or 3 times, and he's telling people.
But we see it so often where they still stay, even if it's right in front of them.
Yeah.
Men and... They'll still stay, and I don't know why. But I've not been in that position, so maybe I just don't understand why. I don't know.
His lawyer, George Scordis, he also was a spokesperson for the Richens after... Oh, no, I'm mm-hmm. sorry. No, that doesn't make sense. Oh, yeah, for his family. Sorry, I got confused because I'm like, well, her last name's Richens. You take the name of the husband. Okay. He said he hoped to keep his family together. He hoped to keep his boys in a nuclear family, and he hoped that things would work out. So I'm just going to, you know, let's just interrupt our discussion of the crime right here and say it will never work out with the person who is trying to kill you.
Right. And you will die eventually.
Yeah. The only way it works out is when you're dead. And
There's balloons coming off from behind you. Sherry, what are you doing? Don't use your hands. Do it again. I'm telling you, there was...
You're tripping me out.
No. When you said the words are triggering something, you gotta...
Are you sure you've not gotten into some medication? Do I need to call Steven?
What are balloons? You watch this after.
Okay, so...
You have something on there, or Lana does. Because every emotion you're saying, things are happening. Celebration confetti.
Well, I'm doing this. Nothing's...
Happiness balloons. Say balloons again.
Balloons? I didn't say balloons.
Or whatever you said.
I'm not a monkey. So I don't... Okay. Anyway, back to the crime. So between December 21st and February 22, Corey contacts her housekeeper, expressing an interest in getting some prescription pain medication. She told her housekeeper that it was for an investor who suffered a back injury. Her housekeeper gets her some hydrocodone pills from a local drug dealer in Ogden, Utah. But Corey wanted something stronger, so she asked for fentanyl and called it, quote, some of the Michael Jackson stuff. But he didn't die from fentanyl. He died from propofol, not fentanyl. The housekeeper contacts a drug dealer on February 11th to pick up the fentanyl. Corey paid $900 for about 15 to 30 pills, which fentanyl is very deadly. She didn't even need that many. She picked them up at the housekeeper's home. Then on February 14th, allegedly tried to kill Eric using the sandwiches. I'm wondering if he thought it was an allergy when he was actually drugged with fentanyl.
I don't know. He got sick before in Greece. My mind would go to, she put something in here.
Well, remember February 14th, he got very ill and thought he was having an allergic reaction.
Mm-hmm. I know this. If you have a housekeeper or anyone in your life that knows a drug dealer, probably you wouldn't hire him.
Exactly. And fire him immediately if you find out. On February 26, she contacts the housekeeper again for more of the same. The pills were left at the Midway house, the multi-million-dollar house that she forged his name for. Eric dies March 4th, 2022, but was it from fentanyl? Well, an autopsy revealed that he had five times the lethal amount of fentanyl in his system, and they also were able to find out that he digested or ingested it orally. Do you have anything else that came out of the special?
No, unless it was in that mule. It's just interesting to me she had to have the pills twice. I mean, it wouldn't take hardly anything to kill him. I mean, why would you buy?
I'm wondering if maybe that she was told they were fentanyl, but they weren't.
Oh, well, maybe. I don't know. Well, she went to the same drug dealer, though.
I know, but maybe they were just tired of this lady. And, you know, drug dealers aren't the most honest of people. Maybe they're like, yeah, I give her this. And it was so watered down, it was worth nothing. I don't know. I agree.
I don't think they say anything that he was allergic to anything that I remember they could have. So, but if he had a reaction like that, it was either medication or something he's allergic to.
If he was... Like, if she used the pills, the first set of pills to poison him, I just cannot believe that they were fentanyl or they were, you know, made with very small amounts of fentanyl, because everyone knows it doesn't take much to kill you on fentanyl.
I agree. He would have already been dead if she had the strong fentanyl.
I'm really curious if this came out in the special you watched, because the very next day... My research shows that Corey closed on the mansion and invited friends over to celebrate. So the day after he dies, some reports say that she had a party to celebrate the purchase of the mansion. Did that come out anywhere?
She did have a celebration on the mansion, but I didn't know it was a day after. I just don't remember.
And I heard it was at this event that Corey attacked Katie when she became aware for the first time that Eric had removed her from his will and made Katie his power of attorney.
Yeah, that's the fight I was talking about. I don't know if it was at the party, but when when Corey found out she didn't inherit everything, because she checked into it pretty quickly, she confronted the sister, and they got in an argument, and Corey just hauled off and punched her right in the face.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Yeah.
Corey, not long after she found out about this, sued the sister-in-law for control of the estate, and I heard it's still pending. Now, with the charges, it may not be. Katie responded by saying that Corey is a suspect in a pending homicide case. The sisters alleged that he didn't tell Corey that he removed her from his will because he was afraid she might kill him. Plus, he wanted his children financially secure should something happen to him.
Yep. Isn't that horrible? You know, the bad thing is not only you murder someone, you think you're going to get all this money, but your husband, here's the thing. He was smart enough to change his beneficiary, his policies back. I mean, change everything. And yet he stayed. It's just puzzling to me. And it's very sad, very sad.
It is puzzling. You know, the only other thing that I could think of is, was he afraid that if he left, she would get the kids?
I don't think she would have got the kids, though.
How do you know? I mean, she's not.
No, but.
She, most of the time, the moms get them.
Well, yeah, but she has the history. I mean, he was poisoned twice. She racked up bills in his name, fraud, just a lot of stuff.
I don't know if you could.
Buying drugs.
I don't know if you could bring up that, you know, he was poisoned, because he doesn't know that. There's no proof. She wasn't convicted.
But there's proof she got pills. There's proof that she forged his name.
There wasn't proof yet. No one knew she bought the pills when he was with her. The only thing that he could have maybe used was a debt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, if he was scared for his kid's safety, he may have thought the best course of action was to stay with her until he could get all his financial ducks in a row and then get rid of her.
Get a plan in place. That makes sense.
Because it doesn't make sense for him to stay with her if she's trying to kill him.
I'm not saying people that do stay are dumb. I'm just saying he was on top of things. He knew what she was doing. That's what I meant by it. He was smart about it. I bet you're right. That makes more sense.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
And it could be that he wanted to keep his family intact, like the spokesperson said, you know, that was his main motivation. But I kind of wonder, you know, a lot of times people that are savvy like that, they'll just keep everything quiet, do exactly what they need to do, and then bam, they're out of there. So that might be what he was doing.
But he did tell his sister.
Yeah.
What was going on. So.
Yeah.
Of course, they're very smart, because when something happened to him, you know, the sister has all the information.
I also heard that 2 days after the altercation with Katie, that she hired a locksmith to open the safe, Eric's safe, that Katie and his trustee objected, and that she punched him in the face then.
Yeah, Katie was there. And this is how it said it on the special. She was there, and she caught her trying to get that safe open. The sister said, "That's not yours." And she got up and started arguing with her about the money and the beneficiary, and, you know, that the sister had it. And that's when she punched her.
Okay, so it wasn't at a party. We don't know when the party was, but this is not when there was an altercation. It was tied to the safe and when she was trying to open it.
About the safe. She caught her trying to get that safe open, and she said, "That's not yours."
That makes more sense. I also found out that he had consulted a divorce attorney. Did they confirm that?
I don't remember.
Okay.
If it says that in your research, I'm sure they did. It was a very long special. I just don't remember.
Did Eric have an affair?
No.
Okay, so there were rumors that he had. Mm-hmm. I couldn't confirm it. And then you mentioned drugs. Can you tell us about that?
So the time the drugs came up, she said that he had taken fentanyl to relax. Everyone around him knew that he would take gummies to sleep. Not every night, but he'd take gummies. But she was setting the fentanyl story up that he took drugs. Okay. That's where the letter came in. Do you have the information on the letter?
No. Yet? So what's up on the letter?
So She wrote, it's probably been 4 months ago, 5 months ago. She had wrote a letter, it was probably about 4 months, to her brother. This is how smart this girl is, saying, oh, tell my lawyer, don't forget to tell him he takes fentanyl every night.
Okay, I did watch a video on that.
Yeah, well, and then when she was confronted, they took it away, mm-hmm. of course. She said, oh, that's just about a book I'm writing.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not true, but it's fiction. I was just writing that. But the prosecutor saying is she did that so her brother could alibi her and it all go on him.
I have an audio on that, I think. Hang on.
It's very interesting. It just gets more and more interesting.
The infamous Walk the Dog letter, allegedly written by Corey Richens while behind bars, charged with the murder of her husband, Eric. She has a big hearing coming up, November 3rd. Meanwhile, Corey and her husband had three children together. They were married. They had money. But she had her own little realty business, and he had a successful business. Her business not so successful. And prosecutors say she wanted all of his money to fund her real estate flipping business. She's accused of poisoning him in March of 2022, five times the lethal dose of fentanyl placed in his Moscow mule that she prepared for him. Now, that letter, that Walk the Dog letter, some legal papers were filed, and she said, no, that wasn't a letter trying to get my brother to lie for me on the witness stand. No, no, that was part of my new novel that I'm writing behind bars. How about that? So the same day that the legal papers are filed, there's a phone call between Corey Richens and her brother, Ronnie, about this Walk the Dog letter. Take a look, because we have the transcript. And Ronnie says, like, what the heck are they disciplining you for? And Corey says, and then I'm on 30 days of lockdown, 23 hours a day, no commissary. Ronnie, the brother, for what? Like, they have to give you a reason, Corey, for the paperwork. That's what they're saying, for my paperwork that they illegally found, which I wasn't hiding. It's a 65-page novel. They read the whole thing, and on the front of the novel, this is the worst part, on the front of the book, it literally says, these are true events that have happened in my life, but the statements, the events, and the way it all plays out have been falsified for a fiction novel. It's called To Heck and Back. None of this can be used against me. This is only a book. That's why I'm telling you this is insane. There was never a letter. There was never a letter in the book in an envelope. Like there was, like this was never a letter. Like what the bleep are you talking about? Ronnie, they're trying to bleep her entire trial to taint the darn jury. Corey, uh-huh. Then her brother. And it's obvious that's what they're doing. Corey, right. Because Ronnie says, because they're that desperate. It is unbelievable. All right. Let's bring back in our think tank.
The brother needs to wise up.
Well, why would you? Actually, they found that the letter is really, that's what she called the book. They found it. And by the way, when you're in jail, it's not illegal to search your.
No.
Just FYI. So she had wrote all this on legal regular paper. So they at the beginning had referred to it as letter.
It's ridiculous. The brother, I don't know. Like, she's obviously a very good liar, but the brother needs to get a clue here. You know,
even a stranger listening and seeing that would say, how dumb are you?
Well, and how dumb are you to think it was illegal? Like you said, you have no rights in prison. That's illegal. You have a right to defense. That's about it. You know,
that's it.
Anything that you think is yours is not yours in prison. They can search anytime. They can take anything they want, especially if they think it pertains to your guilt.
And this gal's upset she didn't get to go. She didn't have commissary.
Here's the thing. anything that you say will be used against you in a court of law, you idiot. You know what I mean? It's like that word say includes what's written. So it, you know, it doesn't matter if you say it verbally or if you write it down, anything will be used against you in a court of law. So don't put all your plans in writing, maybe.
And if you do write your book, maybe you shouldn't say, this is a true story of my life. And the next paragraph, right? But the names and situations have changed. This is a fictional book.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Wise up, brother. You need to wise up. In April 2023, this is after he, you know, dies, Corey appeared in a segment of KTVX Channel 4's Good Things Utah to discuss and promote her children's book, Are You With Me? Inspired by Eric's passing, he talked about her three C's, or she did, connection, continuity, and care, things she used to help her sons cope with losing their dad. And to top off this just wonderful thing that she did, he's on the cover of the book. See him up there with angel wings and a little halo?
Yep.
Yep.
He said on that special, they had the reporter there, that for the kids to understand more and they would see that he was watching over them, because one of the children had wondered if their dad was watching. I thought the three C's were the names of the kids in Corey.
Maybe, but that's what she said it was about for the interview, which we're going to listen to the reporters that interviewed her. After that, she was arrested for murder and possession of a controlled substance with the intent to distribute in May. So it was May 8th, 2023. The two anchors.
Go ahead.
Let's see. Let me pull up this video. They discussed what it was like interviewing her. Now, I don't always trust when people do that because they kind of add to things. That's just. It's been proven people will add, and you're like, oh, I think she felt this or she was like this or whatever. But it's still an interesting clip here.
Utah interviewed the seemingly grieving widow about her book, Sue Ray Chin, and Dina Manzanares. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Appreciate it. All right, Dina, let me start with you. Did you see anything about her? Was there anything about the interview that you guys were doing with her that made you suspicious?
Nothing at all made me suspicious. I didn't have any spidey senses going off meeting and talking to her. I did think she was a little emotionless, maybe lacking a little bit of warmth, but everybody grieves differently. And I didn't want to judge. So I thought, you know, maybe she's still numb. It's only been a year. Maybe she's on autopilot. I didn't have anything that seemed out of the norm to me.
Sue Ray, let me play a little piece of sound. This is one of the questions you actually asked her during the interview. Let's listen.
So you actually wrote this book with your children.
I did. Mm-hmm.
And it's only been a year. How did you process and say you go from processing death to I need to write a book and help others?
You know, I just watched the struggle that my kids were going through. And I actually, you know, I went on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and trying to find something that we could use to cope at nights. Nights are the hardest, it seems like, for everybody when, you know, dealing with anything. But I just wanted some story to read to my kids at night. And I just could not find anything. I couldn't find anything that really, you know, suited them or helped them find comfort and peace. And so, you know, I was like, let's just write one.
Sue Ray, it seems that you thought at the least it was a bit odd that she was able to grieve and write the book and get it published within a year.
I think people process things in different ways in their own time. But yes, a lot of times on our show, Good Things Utah, it's a lifestyle show, and we allow people to share their stories and however they process it. And I put myself a lot of times in their shoes, and I think I would never be able to grieve in that amount of time and then write a book and then also take care of my three small children who are 10, 9, and 6. So I did find it, wow, I can't believe that you've done it. So I needed to ask that question, like, how did you process this whole year and then write a children's book and then come on a show to talk about it?
So, Dean, I assume when you guys heard the news, you were stunned. What is the key evidence thus far that prosecutors have released against her?
Well, here's some really interesting things that happened. So she had come on the show. She wrote in to us. Our executive producer then booked her. We do the interview. Well, the night of the interview, an email comes into the station that's totally anonymous, but it says, you know, she killed her husband. We all kind of looked at that. Didn't think much of it at the time. We get a lot of crazy emails at times. Then a couple of days later, I got a personal message to my Facebook from an account that I don't know, you couldn't really see who it was, but it said, you need to investigate her. She's a suspect in her husband's murder. So at this time, we're starting to think, what is going on? But didn't know anything until everyone found out when this went public on Monday. So right now, we don't have any other information than what has now been made public. We were sent the search warrant. We're, you know, watching for all of the new details coming down. We are completely shocked to have read through the search warrant.
And then apparently they say that they believe it was a financial motive. I'm out of time. Sue Ray Chin.
Okay, so that's interesting. You've got the email that, you know, they get after interviewing her. What I also, I don't know if you noticed, do you find it weird that she's wearing a coat?
I did find that weird. Yeah, I found that sort of strange.
I mean, here you are on national television and you're wearing a coat.
When you want to look your best without the coat.
Makes you wonder if she's trying to hide something. You know, because people, when they're guilty, they try to block. So, you know, you got Chris Watts, who was almost practically hugging himself when he was interviewed, and here she's wearing a coat.
You know what's interesting, though, is I don't know if they found out who wrote that anonymous.
Not that I could find. And
what's real interesting, too, you know, the police kept that quiet. On the special, they were on to her less than a month into the investigation. That's, they kept it quiet. They wanted more evidence. That was interesting, too.
Yeah. And they said that Corey, you know, said that her husband's death was sudden. She didn't share how he died, but she said it completely took us all by shock. We have three little boys, 10, 9, and 6. And my kids and I kind of wrote this book on the different emotions and grieving processes that we experienced in the last year. When asked what she thought might have happened, she said she believed it was COVID-related and Eric had a lung issue. So blame COVID.
Did she say two different things, though?
Do what?
Did she say two different things?
She might have. Wouldn't surprise me.
COVID and then something else. Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, I don't remember. But
Corey, her face. Okay, so knowing body language, what I will say I observed is her face appeared tight. And what I mean by that is it looked like she was under some stress. I found out later that she knew during the interview that she was being investigated for her death or his death because authorities had already searched her home and they had questioned her several times. Did they bring any of that out in the special?
Yeah, they had brought out she had questioned her, but I don't know what the timeline on that was. And they had searched her house, but I didn't know it was before the special. But yes, they could.
Okay, and then they said that, you know, she said she was in bed with her son, but her cell phone was plugged into the bedroom wall.
I wouldn't find that too suspicious, though, because I'm sometimes in another room and have my phone in another.
Well, I'm not done. The investigator saw, so she's supposed to be in the phone with her or in the room with her son, but investigators saw that she had locked and unlocked her phone multiple times when she was supposed to be asleep in that room, and that she had sent and received several text messages that were later deleted, and then they saw her phone was moving around the home. So it wasn't plugged in. She was taking it with her, and she was sending and receiving messages. They also learned that she had taken out multiple life insurance policies that equaled close to $2 million. They found communications between Corey and her housekeeper for the drugs. Plus, they found some search topics like, what's the legal dose of fentanyl? She also searched about life insurance payments, police investigations, how data is collected from electronic devices, can cops force lie detector tests, luxury prisons in America for the rich, death certificate matters, like if the death certificate says the death is pending, will life insurance pay, and how to permanently delete information on iPhone remotely. They found a second iPhone in a dresser drawer next to her bed. So let me just give maybe people out there a tip. It's really stupid to do Google searches, okay, on criminal activity.
Yeah, and thinking you can delete it.
Yeah.
But she had a master's degree. I mean, she wasn't stupid.
Obviously.
But this case is very stupid.
Oh yeah, me and Elena recorded one of the episodes is Murder by Google, and it's the Brian Walsh case of the mom that disappeared in New York last year and or earlier this year, and he literally Googled everything: how to dispose of a body, how to cut up a body, how to get DNA out of a house, how to clean up a crime scene. I mean, the guy is an idiot. And so here she's doing the same thing.
This is 2023, people. Surely in your lifetime, you have watched a crime episode or heard of one, or know that everything you Google, everything you say, I mean,
there's a trail.
I mean, seriously, and delete doesn't delete.
They found the forged documents and the steps that Eric took to get Corey off of his life insurance policies. They found his living will. They saw that he had removed her as his designated healthcare agent and a whole bunch more. So it adds up to circumstantial case, which circumstantial cases are very strong. The forgeries were what they call simulated forgeries, meaning that's where someone tries to copy, draw, or duplicate the person's signature and initials. They also found that Corey spent her time making calls to the IRS and a money lender discussing $2.5 million in debt the day he died. She also said that she had performed CPR, but the EMS said that they were the first to perform it because foam came out of his mouth when they did. And if she had already tried, that would have already happened. So she's being held without bail because the family feels that she's a danger if she's out. I'm not sure. This is like a quote. Let me read this. I'm not sure where it came from. I don't have it. There are what is commonly known as bug out bags for the defendant and each of her children in the garage. One is labeled Eric. Eric, or each labeled kit, consists of a larger duffel bag and smaller day pack, approximate in size for the individual family member. The duffel bags contain clothing, shoes, toiletries, cold weather gear, and camping supplies. The state motion continued. Okay, so this is a state motion. They also contain copies of important documents like driver's license, social security cards. The day packs contain survival-related items like Mylar blankets, ponchos, first aid kits, flashlights, spare batteries, non-perishable foods, water bottles, pocket knives, and children's toys. They found these backpacks full of these items in the garage, and they use it as evidence that she might try to flee. Mm-hmm. There's also an email that she sent out to the detectives about some questions that they had. I thought I had a copy of it. I don't. But let me just tell you this. She has this letter. I've seen it. You can Google it and find it. So she has this letter, this email that she's answering questions for the detectives, and she's got emojis all over it. We're discussing the death of your husband, and you're using emojis.
What is wrong here?
And she will not be tried for a death penalty case, I found out. So that was decided. They're not going to seek the death penalty. It's probably better not to, because she does have her boys that might add to their anguish, especially considering the fact that they're little, but they are not going to seek the death penalty. So I guess November 3rd next week is a big date.
But you know, as a family member, and if my brother was murdered, I would want the death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the damage is done. Your mother killed your father.
I don't know.
I know that's
that'd be hard for me.
But, you know, I don't know. Tell me what you think, Sherry. I think she may try to commit suicide. at the end of this, or is she such a narcissist?
Yeah, she's one that I'm not sure she would actually. I think she loves herself a little too much. Like if you look at the ones that do kill themselves, it's a control factor. They're going to control the narrative. Yeah, Israel Keyes is a good example. He didn't kill himself because he wanted to die. He killed himself because he wasn't going to tell them anymore. The usefulness wore out. I also think he killed himself because how is he going to face his daughter, which he didn't want her to know anything. It's like, well, maybe don't be a serial killer and that you might be able to prevent that.
Or maybe she'll have a phone that has Google. I mean, how dumb.
But I don't think she will, actually. I don't think she will. Mm-mm.
Look him up.
I think that she
will. I wonder if her mother might change her name and identity, you know, just to.
I don't know, but I think that she will live and I think she'll thrive in prison.
Oh, this one. Yeah, I was thinking of Israel Keyes' daughter. Yeah, I wondered if she would commit suicide because. Mm-mm. She just doesn't seem embarrassed about anything or.
Nope.
So yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, she'll probably live. Okay. So we.
Oh, is she going to live in one of those prisons for the rich?
Probably not. I didn't even know there was such a thing.
I didn't know either. I don't think there is there?
I mean, I don't know. If anybody that's listening to this wants to Google like our criminals like to do.
Let us know.
Let us know. Yeah, DM us on Instagram or Facebook, Outline of a Murder. By the way, merch is live. We have 3 t-shirts. I'm wearing one. It's like a dictionary of the word mannequin. It's what everybody thinks a dead body is when they first find it. It's never a mannequin. I've said this over and over. That's why we now have a t-shirt. And then, of course, we have our signature, Be Smart, Be Rude, Don't Be a Victim. And then I also...
That one, by the way... I got a lot of people ask me where to get them. And I also had a lot of people say, that's how I live my life. And
yeah.
I'm thinking, well, are you rude to people? I mean,
well, every time I go out and wear it, I always get people that comment on it. I like the t-shirt. I'd like to get one, blah, blah. So outlineofamurder.com is where you can get them. We'll have them drop shipped to you. So it takes a touch longer than it might if we had a whole bunch of inventory, but I have nowhere to keep the inventory. So the shirts are made the minute you put the order in, they're made. It took about, I think, 10 days for me to get mine. So it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. And
they're very good quality. It's not cotton. It's it has cotton, but it's a rayon. It's a really good.
Yeah, they're soft.
I'm not saying that because I have one and Sherry made them. It really is. It's the kind of shirt. It's not like a regular t-shirt cotton that'll shrink. You know,
they run a little big. I have found out, and because I'm typically a medium in my t-shirts. I like a little bit more room. When I first got them, they actually seemed like they were a large, but once I washed them, they did shrink down and they're perfect. So just so our listeners know that, we also have 3 stickers and that you can purchase in a couple different sizes. So we're getting our merch up and it supports the show.
I think like cheap cotton does. They don't shrink.
Oh, no, no. They're really neat shirts. They're really soft too. I like them. Yeah, they're my favorites. Okay, it's time for the tagline. So you're doing 2.
Be safe.
Nope.
Wait, be smart.
Yes.
Be smart. Be rude. Don't be a victim.
You literally just did my line.
Oh, be smart. Be rude.
Outline of a Murder is a Mr. Joseph production. What do you think, Joseph?